Good morning. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rollins and Marl Thomas. It is Wednesday, June 17th, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. Good morning, Jamarl.
What's happening, man? Doing okay this morning?
I am doing okay. I'm actually laughing my ass off looking at Zionists freaking out online. It's been just so entertaining. The Hasbara types have been so mean, so intellectually dishonest, so rude. And so verbally abusive for so long that to see them getting their comeuppance is a joy that I never anticipated. I just never thought, even if this all turns out to be a chimera and it turns out that the whole thing blows up as you've predicted will likely happen, it's still, a fun few days to watch their freak out. I hope it lasts just so that the freak out lasts. I mean, we've been at their bullshit now for better part of a century, so we're kind of owed a century plus interest of their freaking out and being made miserable. The only thing is, we don't really have the anti-Zionists. We don't really have the energy to just get up every morning and just bullshit them and lie, and because we have other things to do. I mean, we have cats to take to groom their claws. We have food to eat, you have to get dressed and look great as opposed to me. It's just we have other things, we have lives, but still, I'm laughing my ass off. I really am. I mean, it is so great.
It is an enjoyable experience. It is. I mean, but let's be honest though, the enjoyable experience for me is, yeah, there's an element of them freaking out, the Mark Levins, the neocons who are finally seeing the leaked draft for the first time, and they're freaking out at what's in the leaked draft. I think they need to calm down a bit. I think they're like the spoiled children. Oh my God, I asked for a green Maybach, not a black one. I don't want this, mom. That is taking place, right? But the reality of it is, they've gotten so accustomed to getting everything that they want that even a deal like this, that is, most of the items in the deal was pushed to the future. They're royally freaking out, which I love. But let's be very clear, this is because of military defeat. Like, this wouldn't take place if it wasn't. Put it this way, if Donald Trump had a military solution, he would have taken it. And obviously, looking at the leaked document, the pressure that had been on him for him to even put stuff like this in a document is pretty astonishing. Whether or not this stuff is pushed into the future or not, it was put into the document as enticements to get Iran to sit down at the table and talk. And so it's pretty amazing. I mean, some of this stuff is immediate, like the, what, $12 billion of Iran's own money going back to him. That's immediate.
That's
Meaning,
immediate.
even if this blows up in a week, money is in their pocket.
12 billion bucks is already maybe on it's already in escrow or it's on its way.
Yeah. If, from my understanding, it's been unfrozen through like Qatar or something like that. So let's just be clear. This wouldn't happen if it wasn't for the US being militarily defeated.
100%. I mean, it's amazing to me that the neocons, they can't look at a map, right? It's like, well, look, guys, even if Trump had authorized an Iraq-style ground invasion with hundreds of thousands of US and possibly allied, like British troops, you still couldn't have recaptured control of the Strait of Hormuz. As long as there's any part of Iran still under Iranian government control, they could fire missiles and drones at the Strait of Hormuz, right? And no insurer was going to authorize an oil tanker to pass through there. So you can't, it's not physically possible for a country the size of the United States with its military, the size that it is, to occupy all of Iran. It's just too big. And so therefore, it was never going to happen, just given the, just given geography and existing technology, you just couldn't win. And that was it. So, I mean, it has nothing to do with Trump selling out or being too weak or anything like that. It's just reality that, by the way, I'm glad to see, Trump acknowledging reality. And, I mean, I'm very quick to criticize. And I want to praise Trump for coming to his senses, admitting, you know, basically trying to make peace and end this conflict, and possibly at the expense of Benjamin Netanyahu. That's, I mean, seriously, good. I mean, the only, you know, you can't go back in time and say you shouldn't have, you know, of course we can say you shouldn't have done this. Of course he shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
You know, and thousands of Iranians would still be alive and 13 Americans would still be alive. But we are where we are. Given where we are now, he is doing the right thing. We've got to talk about this $300 billion.
Wait, real quick. I think you're giving him way too much credit.
Go.
I think you're giving him way too much credit.
Okay.
Like, put it this way. Give it a month. If in a month, give it a month.
Okay. Well, no, granted. And then give it two, and then give it three. No, I mean,
The reason why I say give it a month is because we've seen this. Like, it's like the
this
reason
feels this very works, different, though.
I don't think it is.
I know.
I think that Trump was up against a wall that he couldn't get past because the oil was going to go bankrupt.
That's the part that's different. The clock ran out.
The clock ran out. And he was forced to sell whatever he had to sell to get that Strait of Hormuz open. That's what happened. Like, I don't think it's, this is not Trump recognized reality. None of this stuff in the deal, if you notice, most of the stuff in the deal is pushed into the future, a final agreement, this thing, this that may take place in X amount of time frame and everything else. None of this stuff is, like, most of the stuff in it is future. Also, again, there is a huge question around the issue of Lebanon, because Iran has very clearly said that is part of the deal. In fact, in the documents, Lebanon comes up like three times, and it is the first thing in the list. Israel has not stopped attacking Lebanon. I mean, like, what do I do with this, right? And it's either this belief that Israel is a singular, rogue, sovereign state, or it's not. Now, obviously, Iran doesn't see it as a sovereign state. I don't see it as a sovereign state. It has never been a sovereign state. It is the dog that has been had a leash with so much lax in the leash that it believed it was a singular independent entity. Now, the catch becomes, does the president pull on the leash? And up to this point, I don't care if he drops the F-bomb. I don't care if they're leaking this idea of, oh, these people have disagreements. I don't care. Does the U.S. continue to give them money? Does the U.S. continue to give them political support? And if and when Iran responds and hits Israel, does the U.S. get involved? That's what I need to see. Otherwise, I don't believe this. I've seen this too much with the Biden administration, and I've seen it with the Trump administration, where they feign disagreement while allowing Israel to continue what it does. I don't buy it. I mean, I could be wrong. And look, forgive me if I'm wrong in this, but I'm wrong in this based on what has been taking place over the course of the last several years. So we'll see. That's what I'm saying. You're giving them too much credit for now. For now. If they come up with a deal and the U.S. fucks off, I'll be like, Ted, you nailed that shit. I would never again question your political acumen.
Jamal, you it is hard to go wrong being cynical and expecting the worst. Generally, the pessimist is right. And so, you know, you have the safer bet here, for sure. I'm out on a limb. Now, let's just say, first of all, I want to be clear. I don't think that anything Israel does to Lebanon between now and the signing agreement on Friday in Geneva counts or matters. I mean, it matters to the people whose homes are being blown up and whose babies are going to die. But it's not going to matter geopolitically. They are going to do that this week under the justification, this is our last chance to do it. And also, this is, you know, there is no ceasefire currently in effect. So not the big one, not the big deal. So we have a few more days to wreak havoc in Lebanon. What really is going to matter is this weekend and next week and going forward. And will the Israelis continue to attack? And will the U.S., as you say, stand by and let the Iranians retaliate if and when they do? And will the U.S. hold Israel accountable? I'm going to go way out on a limb. I think Trump is done with Israel. I think he's done with Netanyahu. I think that now there's nothing he can do about pulling the money, because that's a treaty obligation from the Camp David Accords, right? So that has to go through Congress. It would have to be, it would have to be amended by the Senate. So I don't see that happening, even, even with the diminished popularity of Israel in the United States. So the basic funds of $4 billion a year are going to continue to flow. Would supplemental funding for adventures like the genocide in Gaza continue? That I don't think so. I think we go back to the status quo, antebellum. I think that's where we are, but we'll see. I mean, we got to talk about something that, we only students of history see, which are war reparations.
I mean,
Iran had demanded war reparations. I thought, you and I talked about this. We both thought that's a throwaway, right? I mean, the Iranians know they can't get that. Nobody pays war reparations, right? The U.S. lost to Vietnam. We didn't pay reparations. The U.S. lost in Iraq and Afghanistan. We didn't pay reparations. In this case, we're not paying. I mean, this is so Donald Trump. It's like that play, OPM, other people's money. But Donald Trump is going to have the Gulf states, who, by the way, were going to have they were going to pay for like Sandals Gaza and, Club Med Khan Yunis in Gaza. Instead, they're not going to be doing that. They're going to be giving Iran $300 billion for reconstruction. I think this is super interesting. The poor Gulf states, I mean, they get bombed during the war for picking the wrong side. And now they have to shell out a third of what Elon Musk is worth in order to pay for Iran to be fixed up again. I mean, it's kind of amazing. They're not calling it war reparations, but what else is it? I mean, literally, it's to encourage investment in Iran. So if you're going to encourage investment, to me, that says all sanctions relief are off. Otherwise, you can't have foreign investment. And it means complete integration into the international community, which means that Iranian citizens and U.S. citizens can visit each other's countries, get tourist visas. That's what Trump envisions here, is he's looking for Trump Tower Tehran. I think he has a big, he's looking at things Ted Rall style right now.
Never going to happen. I don't think this would be God, man. I feel so cynical talking.
Well, they say that half the $300 billion is already on the way.
That's what I've heard. That's what I think Reuters is reporting, that half of the money. Because J.D. Vance is out here and Trump is like, we're not giving him any money. And J.D. Vance, we're not giving him any money.
He's saying it's not us.
No, it's not reparations. Us.
It's
what it is. It is literally reparations.
It is. And what so else country, do you
mean? Now, mind you, though, this is in the future.
It's not even a loan. It's not like an IMF loan, right? It's a gift.
It's investment. It's not a gift. It's reparations.
Yeah, it's word reparations.
We are paying them back for the damage that we've effectively done. Think of the confidence that you got. Like, you're fighting a superpower, and you're putting demands on that superpower. We want reparations. And the superpower says, okay, we got to get this straight up, but just give it to them. Just give it to them. Now, as you pointed out, they said half of it is supposedly already being accumulated. $300 billion, if final negotiations go through, all sanctions removed if negotiations go through. Right. What is taking place now, though, is oil flowing through, meaning no sanctions on your oil, meaning you could sell it. Petrochemicals, all of those things, you could sell it, have fun, go bananas. Like, meaning all of these things are things that are taking place now because Iran doesn't necessarily trust the U.S. But imagine what happens, though. Like, how is Israel going to be a hegemon in the region when Iran is getting $300 billion of investment, all of the sanctions being removed on their economy? Who is going to be the superpower in the region?
Well, no, that's exactly right. I mean, right, back of the envelope, that's 75 years of Camp David-level support from the U.S. to Israel,
yes, right?
That's a lot of money.
Hence my skepticism.
Now, I'm wondering if there's any strings attached. Like, normally when the IMF or the World Bank lends money to a nation, they always insist that the U.S. or, European contracting firms be engaged to at no-bid contracts to do the work. I can't imagine there's going to be those kinds of strings for the simple reason that it's not practical in a country right. that we've had no diplomatic ties with for so long. I mean, the Iranians are going to get this money and they're going to be able to do with it what they will. I mean, talk about strengthening the regime, too. I mean, a lot of Iranians never liked this government, but now, you know, they're going to have all sorts of things that us Americans can only dream of. They're going to have high-speed rail. They're going to have, you know, brand new schools and hospitals. It's going to be, you know, highways. I don't think, unless, you know, the mullahs steal it all, which is, I guess, always a possibility. But, I mean, it's going to boost their economy enormously.
Yeah.
A lot of unemployment's going to come down. All that stuff has to be built with people.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the sanctions that the U.S. had been using against Iran was in order to damage the country itself, basically to hurt people with the idea that those people blame the government for the pain and misery that they were effectively feeling, ideally like a Venezuelan or Syrian situation.
Mm-hmm.
This reverses all of that. But again, I keep needing to put this in context in the future. Like, meaning we got to get to the future.
It's not. I mean, right now, as we're speaking, you know, the Supreme Leader can be opening up his bank account and seeing that, like, a lot of commas have just arrived in his bank account. Right, $12 billion is already on the way, and $150 billion could be there by Friday.
I have a question for y'all. Could we lose the war so we get high-speed rail between Kalispell and New York?
I would love that. Yeah.
I mean, we lose wars anyway, but we don't get anything out of it. Can we lose a war and actually...
Losing paid off for Japan and Germany big time.
Except for the dead people.
And by the way, the idea that the Gulf states get smashed by Iranian missiles and then Trump tells them, give them $300 billion is amazing.
Yeah,
no, and again, that is amazing.
And this, by the way, plays into the Rawl narrative, okay? So... why didn't the Gulf states say, sit and spin, Donald? Why? Because they can't, because they're our bitch, okay? And similarly, and who is Bibi? Bibi's our bitch. And Trump recognizes that. And this had to have been rough for Trump, you know, who's trying to project this hyper-masculine butch image. And everybody has been talking about how he's been, like, you know, gobbling BB's cock all these years. And now it's like now this is his chance to be like, I'm a big boy now. I just turned 80. And now it's time to be a man and put away childish things and stand and walk tall. I'm trying to mix as many metaphors as possible. Uh-huh. And like, you know, I mean, good for little Donald. He's finally grown up. And he's telling that bad, mean, bully BB to shut the fuck up. I mean, the thing is, that's it, right? What else? What other explanation is there for the $300 billion? The Arab states could have been like, are you kidding me? We want reparations. They bombed us. We didn't bomb them. But they can't.
Again, he was under the eight ball. Like, I don't think Trump cares about human beings or human life or human suffering or human misery.
Not at all.
But I do think he cares about the gas going to infinity.
Yeah.
That I do think he cares about.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the problem is not solved, but yes.
The problem is not solved. And once you get past, you get oil flowing, you get gas going down, we will be back.
By the way, there's all sorts
of... We will be back.
There are all sorts of, I mean, I'm sure you've read about this, but it's obvious. There's all sorts of economic implications to this that go, you know, in terms of the rejiggering of the global energy environment. Right. And basically this is going to hasten the move towards green energy, you know, solar, wind, et cetera. And China is a huge beneficiary because they've invested so big in the, you know, heavy metal mining, you know, industries that are important for these things like manufacturing solar panels and so on. I mean, they've pivoted in a huge way away from fossil fuels. I mean, you know, all the energy companies, they'll be fine. Everyone always thinks like, oh, like green energy is bad for ExxonMobil. But actually, those companies have massive green energy divisions, right? They're the biggest investors in that sector. So they're leveraging. But it's going to be a big job creation engine around the world. You know, it'll probably have a positive effect on the climate. You know, I mean, this is massive. I mean, this little war, it's hard to think of a 4 month long conflict that with such massive geopolitical implications, right? I mean, it's not quite World War I, but it's a big deal. I mean, it's like now you have like, you know, BRICS is massively strengthened. Between this and the Ukraine conflict, the world looks very different than it did 5 years ago.
Agreed. The world does look very different. I wouldn't put much stock in BRICS, at least right now. I know people
break. That's a long-term project.
Yeah, that's a very long-term project. And if you notice, all of these countries are cynical. Like they have individual concerns. They're in it explicitly for what benefits them. They don't extend themselves to anybody else. I mean, honestly, the most wild thing to me is that Iran extended its shield over Lebanon. An argument could be made that Hezbollah is part and parcel necessary for the defense of Iran in a similar way that Syria was necessary to the defense of Iran. So you could say it's, you know, in the realist sense, well, they're doing it because they need Hezbollah to exist and they're going to defend Hezbollah in this case, which is probably true. No, I agree with you, man. The world is a very different place. You have Iran confident. Up to that point, I don't remember Iran and Israel exchanging fire. And Iran has gotten very familiar with hitting Israel and Israeli targets at this point, just like they've gotten very comfortable with hitting U.S. bases. Putting attacks on America is pretty astonishing, taking the Strait of Hormuz. Okay, well, now you have a regional player that we've maligned for decades, now controlling this major choke point. You've gotten this diminishment of American power from the standpoint of the world's perspective of it, not what it was in actual reality, meaning power is a shadow on the wall. Okay. It's a shadow up until the point where you need to use it and actualize it and do something with it. Okay, we've had to actualize it and do something with it, and we failed. That's big. It's as you point out, giant.
Also, guys, have you thought about the Suez crisis? I mean, that predates all of us. The Suez crisis was just like this, right?
Yep.
And Nasser failed, basically. But it was the same idea. And I'm sure the Iranians thought a lot about this in the same way that, you know, the Afghans, you know, looked at the Sepoy rebellion and thought like, hey, we could get independent from the Brits, right? I mean, these precedents that most Americans have no idea. Like, I think if you walked out into a mall, even in like, you know, I don't know, Cambridge, Massachusetts, near, you know, with highly educated people, very few of them could tell you what the Suez Crisis was. But
I have a question for the two of you. And this is something I've been thinking about. You know, when the Ukraine war started, what you're seeing from on Twitter, all the talking heads and stuff, their little Ukrainian flags, is if Russia loses, it gets knocked out of the ranks of the great powers. Now that the United States has been defeated by Iran, has that knocked the United States out of the ranks of the great powers?
No. I mean, and by the way, it would have been nonsense to think that if Russia being defeated in Ukraine would have knocked it out of the ranks of the big powers. I mean, it's still a country with 11 time zones. It's still the biggest country in the world. It still has tremendous natural resources and a powerful military and deep-rooted political and straightforward culture. I mean, so no. I mean, the United States can absorb this blow. Honestly, I got to tell you, this is going to be one of the best things that ever happened to the United States if it sticks. In the same way that Algeria and Indochina did a huge favor to France. I mean, France was a shithole country after World War II. I mean, I know because I went and visited in the 1970s and it was still desperately poor. My ex-wife, she had a year abroad in college in 1982. In Paris. She stayed in a cold water flat in Paris. They still had them. And like she had to go to the public baths to take a hot shower. They literally didn't have hot running water in her apartment. And that's not true anymore. But France didn't really recover economically from World War II until the 1980s under François Mitterrand and socialism. I mean, that's a long fucking time. You know, and the thing is, losing its colonial empire has been a boon for France. It meant that they were able to start directing resources toward their own social safety net, building up the healthcare system, making life sweeter, better for the French people. You know, that's what could happen for us if we were to get our asses handed to us on the international stage. And we really did have an America First agenda, whether it's a left or a right or a moderate one. That would be a game changer. It would be like, I seriously would be like, thank you, Iran.
Well, that was my take. That's why I keep saying I'm a patriot with the stuff, even though I keep saying I want us to lose. I want us to lose, not because I want us to lose. I want us to lose because I want focus to be brought here. And I want that strategic loss to be felt in the nation in a way where people are like, hey, maybe let's not do this again. Maybe this didn't work out.
Like Hunter Biden, we need to hit rock bottom so that we go to rehab and shape up.
Yeah, we need to have the crack pipe in our mouth and a videotape with the crack pipe. And, you know, the chicks in the back, in the bathroom, naked or something like that.
That humiliation. We have to hit rock bottom.
Yeah, we got to hit rock bottom. And
I don't think it's rock bottom, but, you know, I wish it were.
Until we do that, though, nothing changes. Because, look, again, I am not of mind that people change out of kindness. I think they change because there's something that pushes them to change. There's a certain inertia in the way that people behave. If they see a military failure on a massive effing level, maybe they think to themselves, maybe we shouldn't do that, especially if it hurts back home. Meaning if gas, let me ask you this. Do you think it was a mistake for them to allow the Strait of Hormuz to be open?
No, because they're playing to an international audience here, right? I mean, they're like, this is about global public opinion. They have to, first of all, they also want the Strait of Hormuz open. They're a major oil producing state, right? So they want to export their oil. I know what you mean, like keep the pressure on. I think at this point, they can always go back to it anytime they want. It's a little lever they can just turn. So I think it's like they can go, they can tell the world, they can tell their people, look, we'll go back to business as usual. We get reparations. Everything will be normalized. And we looked out for our buds there in Hezbollah. We looked out for them. That's got to play big in the Arab street. Right. I mean, it just does. It's like, look at the Iranians, man. They stood up.
But again, from my point of view, this isn't over. The predation, like think of Syria for a moment. The first time that Syria was able to fight off the terrorists of trying to attack, all of us were like, hey, good job. They fought off the terrorists. They beat them. They won. They destroyed the enemy. The Russians, the Iranians, and the Syrians together were able to beat back the terrorist dogs that the U.S. effectively was sending to take them down, the U.S., the Gulf states, et cetera. It took 10 years for Syria to fall. That has emblazed my memory because I was doing the show
Syria never had a choke point. Syria didn't have an ace in the hole. Iran does.
I accept that. I'm pointing out that just because we failed the first time didn't mean we stopped. And it took like a decade, if not longer, for Syria to eventually fall to predation. I'm not going to be a triumphalist.
My prediction is that the United States will turn its depredations elsewhere. But Iran is safe for the time being, I think. We will see. We have a bunch of comments. We should get to them. And I'll start with one of the latter ones. Is Ted America First from Matina? Fuck yeah, I'm America First. Okay, here we go. John D. Cockefeller, y'all excited to have the JCPOA back, but with billions of dollars worth of payments and 13 dead Americans? Well, we're in favor of the payments. The 13 dead Americans, which we could get back. And it is more than 13. Yeah. It's going to be 294, right? It'll be $324 billion, at least. Okay. Jabari, thanks for the $2. Good morning, gentlemen. Zio is dead, finally. I think that's true. You're laughing at me. That's fair.
I'm not laughing at you. It's just... Ted, you can be completely right. Look, it is very possible that Trump looks at this and got bored. It's like, all right, I'm done. Oh, I'm out. This wasn't easy. I thought this was going to be Venezuela. It's not. Yeah. I'm calling it quits. That could totally be true.
Oh, and you know what's next? Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah. He could totally go back to, all right, they're easier prey for me to go after.
Yeah. This he's is a predator. Tough nut to
crack. He could totally do that.
But
let me ask you this, though. Do you think that the Zionists that are in Washington have changed? Or the people around Trump that are Zionists have changed?
No, they have. Well, they're going to be forced to change. Look, those people are disgusting. They have all the moral center of a fucking donut with its, you know, little custardy inside, right? There's nothing solid there. Those same fucking people a week ago were saying Donald Trump could do no wrong. Now he's betrayed us. He's a scum. He lied to us. Really? Donald Trump lied to you? Oh my God, who could have ever seen that coming? And then and I guarantee you, like, they'll find some way in the future to, like, get back in the mix and be like, oh, fuck Israel. We never liked Israel anyway. I mean, Laura Loomer, she'll just bark like the dog that she is, right? I mean, that's how they are. Gorill, Ted, surely I can get a shout out. Here's your shout out. Shout out. Okay, Alexander, fuck around and find out, doesn't understand geography. Dollar from FUSO. I guess we don't have alien weapons technology because Trump would have used them to avoid humiliation.
It's like having remote viewers like killing goats. It's like, we need you to kill the second Ayatollah.
You're being too harsh, JT. This is the move of strategic genius. If Trump doesn't know what he's doing, our enemies cannot possibly know either. Yeah, 3D chess.
Strategic incompetence.
Oh, here's Daniel. I swear I didn't read your comment when I just said that. Let's not pretend Trump had some come to Jesus moment when it comes to illegal wars. He's still planning to invade Cuba. I think that's next. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Manchild, Israel's a rabid dog with a nuclear arsenal and a hatred for their Muslim neighbors. The road to hell was paved with good intentions. Yeah, this is where we have to start worrying about a Samson option type situation. Yeah. We really do. Petlantis, Ted, do you really believe Trump wants Trump Tower Tehran, or are you trying to stay optimistic? I actually think he does. He wants all the Trump Towers everywhere. Trump Tower Damascus, Trump Tower Havana. He wants them all over the place. Don't you think?
I think so. And by the way, in doing so, basically proclaiming, I am peace, President Trump. I've made peace with Iran, et cetera, et cetera. Would I be shocked if he tried to feather his cap with something like that? No. But I just think inertia is a hell of a thing. That's all. And we have had an inertia. I mean, McCain was screaming, bomb, 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 bomb Iran. And the crowd was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Like, we've had an inertia in our political establishment ever since Iran got rid of the Shah to, I assume, put the Shah's son back in office or something like that. I think that's going to be very hard for the mechanism in Washington to turn tail. But would Trump want a Trump Towers? Hell yeah, he would want Trump Towers in Tehran.
Why wouldn't he?
Hell yeah.
All right. Zach Diecast Mansour, out of the other side of JT's mouth, come out the words, black people should get reparations.
Black people should get reparations. The issue, let's be very clear. It's not that there's some 230-year-old vampire that, you know, was around that is guilty of slavery. It's not that. It's the U.S. government that is guilty of slavery. The U.S. government still exists. The U.S. government has never paid for that.
There's not even, I don't think, to my knowledge, there's even ever been a formal resolution from Congress apologizing for it.
No, there hasn't. They've just
ridiculous
acted as if it didn't exist. It's like the murdering of the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. We just act like it doesn't exist. We have Thanksgiving and pretend like, hey, Everything was great. They gave us corn.
And like in the Japanese Americans who went to the internment camps, they did get
an apology.
$1,000.
Yep. We didn't get shit. And they make the argument, well, I mean, there was reconstruction and there were affirmative action. And it's like, dude, I can look at the wealth gap between whites and blacks. And it's something like on average, whites is like 100 and something thousand dollars. Blacks are like 14,000. And you look at that and you think to yourself, okay, either some people are right that these people are just inferior, or there was something dramatic that happened that gave one a magnificent head start against the other. I think it's the latter. I don't think people are that radically different where now, they think history, differently in their minds.
History is super, super clear about that. I mean, there's no question about it. All right, let's see.
Yeah, I have no idea what the argument. I agree with it. The issue is, can you do it?
Well, that's always been, in my mind, there's never been any doubt that black people are entitled to, and other disadvantaged groups as well, but black people more than anyone are entitled to massive reparations. The question is the execution, right? I mean,
yes.
Does Barack Obama get reparations, even though, you know, he's not a descendant of slaves? Does a descendant of slaves get it if they're rich? Like, oh, you have $100 million. Should you get reparations? Yes. I mean, should it be need based? I mean, where does the money come from? Is it a tax on whitey, or is it a tax on whitey and Asians and Latinos who have their own issues with our system? I mean, that's execution to me is the rub.
Also, poor whites are not going to go for this idea of giving blacks money.
No.
And let's all be honest.
Yeah, most poor people in the United States are white. So, yeah.
And I would argue that part of the reason that we don't have healthcare, education, and these type of things is because from white's point of view, we're giving stuff to blacks who are undeserving. This is the whole James Baldwin thing. Like, I'm not trying to take your cup of coffee. There seems to be, like, meaning if this was an all white country, or let's say 70, 80, 90% white, we would have healthcare. Or do you think I'm wrong on that?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to chew on that one.
I'm feeling it to be just be paranoid.
No, I don't know.
What do I own that you're entitled to, JT?
Not one thing.
What's your argument?
I don't have an argument for that. There's nothing that you own that I'm entitled to. It's not about what you own. It's about the U.S. government. Government is a different entity than Robbie.
No, I understand that. But what we are a nation of, we are a nation with elected representatives. And if you go along with the mythology of this country, what you're going to hear, you know, people who don't actually study the history say that the Union fought a war of conquest against the Confederacy to free the slaves. Like that's the lie. That's the myth that they put out. So if that's true, if that was the precursor to the liberation of France in World War II, then freeing them, then the act of abolishing slavery and freeing black people with the spilling of American blood should in and of itself.
You're out of your mind.
Pay that bill.
No, listen, you're out of your mind.
No, I agree with you.
Nobody told them to bring slaves here.
No, listen, hey, I agree with you. I mean, slavery is one of the greatest things, one of the greatest evils that's ever been done. It's dumb and stupid.
Put people in bondage and then fight a war to freedom and then claim that the fact that you fought the war to freedom in and of itself.
I agree with you, but that's how the Republicans are going. That's how they're going to try to spin this thing. And to your point, I think that a lot of this stuff would have been fixed before, except for the fact that we have, you know, since let's say when the Immigration Act of 1965 was opened up and up to the current day, to your point, I think that without the massive demographic change that we've had in this country, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now because we would have universal health care. We would have this conversation about reparations would have already been settled and happened. The problem is a lot of people say, well, affirmative action is a type of reparations to black people. That's not true. Affirmative action, more especially when it comes, if you tie into H-1B visas, has disproportionately affected the immigrants that ever has with black people.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, affirmative action benefited white women more than anybody else.
Oh, for sure. No, for sure. Yeah. It's just one of those feel good things. It's just the problem that I guess I have with with reparations. First, okay, the government has to pay for it. Okay, that's fine. But like, say, Ted's a first-generation American. Why should his taxes have to go up to pay reparations when his family wasn't even here when slavery was a thing? So I guess that's how do you parcel that out? How do you figure what that out, what that means? My family was here.
The U.S. government gives Israel billions.
Yeah, that's Israel.
Billions. They're coming out of my tax dollars, coming out of Ted's tax dollars. The government looks at it as this is coming from the government of the United States. It's not about any individual person or any rando. If you come into the country, you're under laws and everything else, the ideals, the culture, et cetera, meaning you take on the debts, just like you take on the virtues and the benefits of being a member of this country. It is what it is. Meaning, Ted tax dollars will go to it. Some rando who just came into the country, their tax dollars will go to it. Just like my tax dollars goes towards immigration issues, or my tax dollars goes towards paying Israel, or my tax dollars goes to things that I don't necessarily want to pay or want to be a part of. Wars, for example, and Iran being another one. Like, meaning we're part of a government. We're not individuals in this case. You can make an argument that the individuals make up a government, fair enough, but there's an emergent entity that takes place at a certain point that transcends any one particular individual on this particular issue. So I get your point, and they will make that argument. But I think the 100%. Argument is the point that we are a country, not individuals. There's a difference.
And for the record, I agree with you. My wife, her great grandfather was a slave. I mean, we got the paperwork. We got the bill of sale, like, literally. I mean, he was a chattel slave. And so that's one of the things that's really kind of unique about my family is this. My family split. Part of it fought for the North, part of it fought for the South. Her grandfather was literally a slave. And now here it is 150 years later, we're married with kids. So my question to you is like my son, Thomas, why should he be on the hook for a bill that he has never owned? And would his reparations outweigh his debt? Like that's the whole issue. Like, how do you mix this thing up? And then if you think about America as a nation of immigrants, well, then if America, and by the way, I don't believe this, if America was built on the back of slavery, then that means every immigrant that's come to this country has benefited from that slavery, and they owe a larger portion of reparations since their population has increased so much more than the domestic population has. That's the whole issue.
Just to be clear, I reiterate, this is not about an individual. If you're in the country at that point, you deal with the virtues and the failings and faults. Meaning, if the United States was attacked because we started a war and the war came back to our shores, the immigrants will also be affected by it every bit as much as if the United States, takes the oil from Venezuela and benefits from it. They will benefit from it also. They get the virtues and the vices. They get both because they became a member of the country. It's not about an individual. I don't doubt that it's complicated. It is complicated.
No, it's a mess.
Because we've let this go for so many years. I mean, for God's sake, we've let this go for hundreds of years. So I don't doubt that it's complicated. And again, it's fraught with political, difficulties. The reason why when Sanders was running, and Sanders wasn't running for reparations, and I didn't fault him for it, I was like, I don't blame him, because I didn't think he could win with it. I thought he'd lose for everything that you're bringing up now. And having to deal with that in a political situation or context, I thought he'd lose if he tried to hit that hammer. Now, mind you, he lost anyway, right?
Yeah.
And maybe he would have gotten the black vote if he would have went that route. I think he would have lost 70% of the white vote if he would have done that. And yes, whites make up 70% of the population. I think he would have lost the majority of
we
whites.
We should move on.
I'll go away with this. I think that a better way to handle this situation, honestly, would be to lift all boats and just pull out of NATO, close the foreign bases, have free education and free healthcare for everyone, and consider the bill paid.
By the way,
that is something everyone can get on with.
Robbie agreed, which is why you rarely hear me push for reparation. Because I think you create a political backlash when you are That's and again, you've heard me make the argument that it is owed. Like, I am unabashed that it's owed. Give me a check. Like Malik would say, give me a check. Malik is a Republican. He'd be like, give me a check. Yeah. By the same token, I think you are far better off if everybody has health care, everybody has education, everybody has so-and-so. I don't think there is no such thing as justice in this case. You can't take the pain that was caused to those right. particular people. You can try to make your country better.
Yeah.
So, well, no, Robbie, agree. Lift all boats.
Try to make it as right as you can.
Yeah. I mean, if any nation owes reparations, it would be the Ivory Coast and Mali, since they're the ones kidnapping their own people and selling to the slave traders anyway. Let's start there. I mean, it just gets messy. Let's just divide the baby and call it a day.
It's very messy. One bit of slavery doesn't justify another.
Come on, we know that reparations can work out great. Let's say, for example, your people have been wiped out in, we'll call it a Holocaust. Then what you do is you take someone else's land and you give it to them to make up for it. And it works out great. No problem. And, no muss, no fuss.
And you get a funny little hat as a bonus prize.
12 noon today, by the way, we have the Q&A show. We can take this up in the Q&A segment in two hours and 13 minutes here. It's 9:47 on the East Coast. If you're just joining us, thank you so much. all right. We have a lot. I'm sorry to keep us moving here, but we have lots of more comments to get to here. All right. Okay. Primal Barbarian. How do you guys think this proposed peace deal will affect LeBron's legacy? Also,
LeBron's? What?
Also, Robbie, when are you going to start an OnlyFans? Ooh, Robbie, I'll be your first.
Robbie, I subscribe to that OnlyFans. I'd be so curious what's in that OnlyFans.
I'd be doing lots of screenshots.
It would be my wife folding laundry. That would be the OnlyFans. Just like I don't know if you watched yesterday's show.
Get very wet for that, you know.
Listen, I'm just saying. But now,
look, it's a man folding laundry.
Yeah, but now y'all can come and join the gaming channel over here on Rumble, Putin by Gaming. I appreciate it.
All right,
we got to find a game that we like, though.
Oh, we got
like chess, Civ.
Civ is good. Have you ever played any of the Baldur's Gate games?
I have never played Baldur's Gate. I know what the words are.
My son plays Baldur's.
I'm familiar with the term, with the words, but I don't know the game. The game. That's by a Chinese guy, right? Or Japanese guy who made it. It's like you're wandering through a dungeon or something.
Well, it's based on Dungeons and Dragons. But the original ones were made by Black Magic Studios. Great classic games. Okay. The new one's made by Larian Studios, based out of Belgium, if I remember correctly. Awesome game. And when Ted pays me, I'm going to get you a copy. Because, are you on PC or a game console?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
So I play chess on, obviously, the PC for Civ. I play on the game console, but I also have it on my PC. So I can play on either.
Gotcha. We're going to hook you up. We're gonna have ourselves some good fun. This can be great.
Okay, all right. Let's move on here.
Ted's like, shut up! I don't care.
Yeah, shut up! All right, Tyler Trotter. Thanks for the $7. Thoughts on Gordie Howe Bridge not opening and trading negotiations with Canada? Love you guys.
Thank you. Wait, what's okay? So I don't know this story.
Gordie Howe Bridge isn't that the bridge in Baltimore? Let me see. What is that? This is the border crossing between Canada and the United States in Detroit. So,
okay.
And anyway, the bridge construction is not open yet. And the opening is delayed due to an international standoff amid ongoing trade talks between the U.S. and Canada. Canada fully funded the $6.4 billion project, but Trump requested the postponement to resolve outstanding trade issues. The Trump administration demands that the U.S. get a share of the bridge's future tolls. So he's literally a bridge troll. And to threaten to delay the opening unless it secures specific concessions about cross-border trade. Okay, so this is the first I've heard of it, which tells you how well covered it is, because I read the every single thing every single day. that is absurd. You know, the United States should have the closest relations possible with Canada, even more so than it does with Great Britain or France. I mean,
agreed.
It's our closest friend and ally, and temperamentally and culturally, they're the closest to us. I mean, they fought side by side with us in every war. I mean, I'm ashamed of how the United States under Trump has treated Canada. So, yeah, I mean, that's my thought. I mean,
I'm ashamed if I would handle a lot of things. Look, I am of mind that the world needs to have a come to Jesus moment. And from my point of view, Trump behaving this way is the fastest way to get to it. Like, because look, like what Canada should do is tell the U.S. to F off. What many of these countries should have done was to tell the U.S. to F off and to join together, recognizing that America has gone rogue, meaning this is about power and this is about gratuitous displays of power. And whereas there was a velvet glove that was always part of, let's say, Obama or Biden or Clinton, even George Bush, kind of to some degree, in contrast, that velvet glove is off. America is insecure. Oh, it was awful. It's like, I'm going to assert myself by beating my wife. It becomes that, right? It's like my boss said bad things to me and I need to show that I'm a man by beating the hell out of my wife. It becomes that. Hence Canada, hence Cuba, hence Venezuela, hence Iran. And obviously, I'm not saying there's not strategic thinking behind it, because it is an insecure empire. It is a hegemon that is trying to reassert its role and power in the world in the face of all of these other actors. But it's doing so by beating the shit out of like Europe and Canada. It's just wild to me.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
This does tie into this other story that we had about Canada. We don't need to spend a lot of time on it, and we don't have a lot of time to spend on it. But fairly recently, Canada passed a law called the Lost Canadians Law. And basically, they liberalized the proof that's required to prove that you have ancestral ties to Canada. So like if you have a grandparent who is Canadian, you can now apply for Canadian citizenship. A bunch of Americans have done that. The 12,000 of them recently got letters from the Canadian government saying, even though you've already received your Canadian citizenship certificate, we need you to send it back because we're reviewing that. I've got to think it has to do with the tensions between the U.S. and between Trump and the Canadians, that they're like, you know, this is a way to fuck with the United States. I don't really know that the United States is going to care that it's people not. Aren't going to have U.S. dual Canadian nationality. But obviously it's upsetting for people who are hoping to get their Canadian citizenship so they can leave and move to Canada.
If I don't think the U.S. cares about its own people.
No.
Let alone is going to care about this. If I'm not mistaken, we don't acknowledge dual citizenship. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, we do. We do. In the 1980s, the State Department issued a memorandum. So it's not like it doesn't have the force of law, but it's a policy statement that says that the United States does. So it used to be that when you became a U.S. citizen, you had to renounce your citizenship overseas. Exactly. No longer. So now if you're naturalized, you can be. I'm a dual national. I have French citizenship. So through my mom. So until I was 18, I just was an American citizen, and then I went and declared my French citizenship. It did not affect my standing whatsoever. There's really very few impacts. It doesn't really affect you, except that, like, let's say France could draft me, for example, but otherwise it doesn't.
Really? Yeah, Macron could call you up.
God help them. God help them if Macron wants me. If it's come down to my 62-year-old ass, they're fucked. It means
Ukraine has been using 60-year-olds. You know what? Every time I hear that, I think to myself, I couldn't imagine my old ass being out on the battlefield dodging bullets and shit.
I mean, I have been at a battlefield dodging bullets, but not with a gun. Just covering the war in Afghanistan.
It's like Jesus.
I mean, although they say temperamentally, like 40-year-olds make the perfect soldiers. I mean, they're still physically strong. but they're like mentally centered and calm.
I could see that if they're healthy. I could see that.
Yeah. Effie said, thanks for the dollar. We're going to race through these paid comments. Did you see Don Jr. with the nose candy at Idiocracy 250 UFC? I did not.
What's that with the nose candy? I wouldn't be shocked.
You ready for the White House Trailer Park House 4th of July party? Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'll be there with bells on. Thanks so much for the $20 from Crown Heights Brainiac. Don't give me money. Stop future taxation pertinent to reparations. FUSO, thanks for the dollar. Because of the velocity of money, reparations should be land home, not cash. Don't want the corporate state to end up with any of the money. There's something to be said for that. You know, if the 40 bakers and a mule had come through, it might be a very different country. Phileas Fab, thanks for the dollar. MMT again, print money and distribute new dollars to reduce economic inequality. It's just a redistribution of fractions of the spending power of the total of currency. You're making my brain hurt. It's not even 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I need you to repeat that one. Say that
okay, here we go.
That one is a little heavy.
Remember, there was an MMT question from Phileas yesterday. Print money and redistribute new dollars. In other words, I guess a new, different kind of dollar to reduce economic inequality. It's just a redistribution of fractions of the spending power of the total of currency. So it's kind of like maybe like creating like Bitcoin or something from thin air.
But it's going to devalue the currency. It's going to cut the value of the money that is being distributed to the people who are getting it for reparations. That makes sense.
Yeah, understand it would cut everyone's,
basically printing new money.
Yeah. For sure. It would do that. Nothing comes for free, right? Like as we learn from physics, nothing is created except when the Big Bang happens. There's nothing comes from nothing.
There's only one magic act and I'll explain everything else.
We have to go to Team Robbie and God. That's the only time we have to go there. sure. Where there's no good explanation for where all that shit came from. Okay, we should very quickly just take note of the fact that the G7 seems to be on board with the current Trump policies. They issued a brief statement calling for pledging to help out with reconstruction in Gaza. That's a change. And they're demanding that the Israelis stand down in Lebanon. So there's a lot of pressure on the Israelis. It's not just from Trump.
Okay.
I know.
Hey, I don't believe them.
You're laughing at yourself.
Those states are playing to their population that also hates Israel.
That's true.
When those guys are making statements, it's kind of like Erdogan. Erdogan would be like, Netanyahu is Hitler, and then would work with that same government to take down the Syrian government. Mm. It's like, okay, dude. It's like you're protesting too loudly right now.
I hear that. Totally. All right. Well, so that's that. We're going to leave it there.
Yeah, I hope you're right. God, man, Ted, you have no idea how much I hope you're right.
Oh, I know. I believe you.
I hope you're right.
We'll be back in 2 hours for 12 noon Eastern time for the Q&A show, because it is Wednesday. We do it Monday and Wednesday. We'll be back for the regular show tomorrow, Thursday morning. TMI coming up right now with Manila Chan. Stay tuned. JT, Robbie, see you in 2 hours. I hope everybody else joins us. See you later. Bye.
Have a good one, guys.